you know that the families that attend live Homeschool Made Simple seminars tend to be the folks that stay the course with our methods for the years to come? There's something wonderful about the excitement that's generated by being in a room full of like-minded families, hearing success stories, fathers meeting other fathers, and teens connecting with new friends. It is said that repetition is the mother of learning. If you want to hold fast to these time-proven methods, it's essential to hear this information regularly as your children's needs and ages change. Join us in Franklin, Tennessee on Saturday, August 1st, or in Dallas, Texas on Saturday, August 29th. We have lots of new and exciting information, speakers, and breakout sessions. Register at homeschoolmadesimple.net/seminars. I can't wait to see you there.
You're listening to the Homeschool Made Simple podcast. This is a podcast to help you homeschool simply, inexpensively, and enjoyably. Carol Joy Side has been helping families homeschool for several decades now through her literature-based approach to education. I'm Rachel Winchester, a fellow homeschool mom using this method with my own three children. One of the tricky areas for many homeschool families can be math. Some of us have our own math baggage we're trying to overcome, and others are simply intimidated by the amount of options on the market. In this conversation, Carol and I get back to essentials. We talk about how you can work with the development of your child in this subject and provide suggestions to help you find a math program that works best for your family. Before we get into the episode, are you ready to jump in and learn more about the Homeschool Made Simple approach? We've bundled our essential teachings together to create the HMS Essentials Bundle. In it, we'll teach you everything you need to know about our approach from the elementary years through high school graduation. This bundle includes four key audio resources, a return to our roots of greatness, a literature-based approach to education, begin with the end in mind, and the homeschooling interview. The HMS Essentials Bundle will help you set a solid foundation for homeschooling simply, inexpensively, and enjoyably in every season of life. And the more than 20 pages of book lists will point you toward the resources that we love most. Use coupon code PODCAST at checkout to receive 15% off your order. Visit our online store, homeschoolmadesimple.net/store, to get the HMS Essentials Bundle today. Now let's get into the episode. Well, today I'm with Carol Joy Side out on her porch enjoying the sunny springtime weather like a naughty girl. Things not to do while podcasting, but she did ask permission, so it has been granted. But today we're going to talk about math because we know that's a hot spot for lots of questions as Carol consults with people and even as we teach at seminars and get questions during that question and answer time. We know that it's a difficult thing to navigate, so we just want to spend some time talking about math, which is Carol's favorite subject, right?
It was always my most hated subject until I sat under Elmer Brooks at my very first homeschool seminar. I sat in the front row and I turned to my friend Judy, who's gone to be with the Lord, and said, if that man had been my math teacher, I would be working for NASA today. So it showed me that the subject was not the problem. Mm. It was who was teaching it. As Anne says, they had no scope for imagination.
Yes, yes. So maybe first we could just start with what's the most important thing for a good foundation in math?
Great question. So if Piaget were here or Dr. Moore were here, they would say starting with the concrete, always starting with things that your children can see and touch and throw, not things that are non-representational or abstract or symbolic. Mm-hmm. Which is why manipulatives are the foundation for any good math program. Mm-hmm. Do you want me to share some of those manipulatives? Because there are some really good ones.
Okay. Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So I would start with dominoes. That's what Elmer Brooks, who designed the curriculum that I love so much, he created something called pre-math it and math it. And in pre-math it, you have double nine dominoes, and you take a domino and you put your hand over half of that domino,
and you say to your child, how many dots are there? And then you take your hand off the other side and, you don't understand what I'm saying. You cover up half, then you uncover it both. Now you add how much are on this side. Now how much are on the whole domino. And then you do subtraction the same way. Now you cover half and you take it away. So they're seeing dots rather than numerals, which is really, it sounds like the same thing to an adult mind, but to a child's mind, it is a completely different thing. So keeping in mind that symbols are non-representational, they're abstract. And according to Piaget, we don't fully become abstract till about 13 years of age. So teaching a first grader with numerals is kind of a recipe for failure and not success. And Dorothy Moore used to say, give your children success experiences every day. So start with raisins or beans or I guess M&Ms, but don't quote me on that. Whatever you can use that is concrete, shoes, children. If you have a nice big family, you know, how many children are wearing red socks? How many are wearing blue socks? How many are wearing socks, you know, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so just always starting with the concrete, so important. And using math experiences all day long. When you go to the market, well, there's three lemons for a dollar or 35 cents a piece, which is a better price? Or, you know, all that kind of thing as you're folding clothes, who has the most white shirts, who has the most black shirts, who has the most shirts. All of these things that children love. They don't need to realize, they don't realize, I should say, that they're doing math. They're just living in a world where math is part of their world, and it's something that they grow up with, and they're comfortable with, and they're confident and friendly with it. And so that's where I'd start, is with pre-math. Another manipulative would be Cuisenaire rods. And it's spelled C-U-I-S-E-N-A-I-R-E, Cuisenaire rods. And they're geniuses. So the little tiny square that you start with is, I think, red. And then the one that's twice as long, I think, is green. And then three times as long is blue. And then four times as long is yellow. So each of these, this is a one, this is a two, this is a three, this is a four. And you add and subtract and doing all, and do all these building projects and things. And they're just wonderful. And you can get workbooks that help you know creative things to do with Cuisenaire rods. And then I like non-curriculum products, like more enrichment products. Mm-hmm. So I like the books that are published by Brown Paper School Books, published by Little Brown. And my favorite would be Math for Smarty Pants and the I Hate Mathematics book. And they were designed by school teachers in California one a year. And their motto is, accept no substitute for fun. And they're not curriculum. They're just enrichment things to help your kids fall in love with math and the fun things you can do with it. And then as your children get older, the most important hill that you want to die on would be Math It. And Rachel, we have done a podcast with the distributors of Math It. Talk about that podcast, would you?
Yes, it's episode 188, and you talk to them about why it's so great and how the program works and how they came to, you know, make it available again because it was out of print for a while. So they made it available again, and it's quite affordable now.
It is. Yes. That's a good point. It used to be more expensive because it was in this fancy box and stuff. And no homeschool care family cares about that stuff. And so they so nicely simplified the packaging and all that and made it so affordable. And the thing about Math It and why it's the hill to die on is if a child does not know their addition facts and eventually their multiplication facts cold, out of a dead sleep, don't waste your time with any other curriculum because they will be hitting a brick wall from day one with it and they will not like math because John Saxon famously said, you like what you're good at and you're good at what you like. And so a child who's successful at a subject is going to want to do more. A child who's not won't. And so before you do any other curriculum, do Math It. And normally, this is really important. Math It is designed for children that are moving into abstraction. So Elmer Brooks said the way you know if they're ready for it is if they can close their eyes, count backwards from 20 to 0, while they're tying their shoe. So this isn't a first grader. Mm-hmm. This is probably about a third or even fourth grader. And based on what they said at Princeton, at the Institute for Advanced Studies, they have recently mentioned Benizet's historic study saying that math should be not be forced on children before the seventh grade. And so this idea of we've got to be doing all this math and curriculum and workbooks and everything, you know, in first grade. But there's no research to back that up. And there's a lot of research to prove that it's actually errant. Mm-hmm. Because if your children's first exposure is, this is really hard, I'm not good at this, I hate this, then they're not going to grow up to want to do more and more of it. So we mm-hmm. want their first exposure to be, I love this. Mm-hmm. I am so good at this. I'm so smart at it. And that's three-fourths of the battle with a subject like mathematics.
Well, and yeah, I think that a lot of people have math baggage as adults yeah. because yeah. because of that reason. And so they think that, you know, maybe they're listening to this and they're thinking like, well, I'm not good at math. How would I be able to teach my kid? And they're yeah. so paranoid that their kid be good at math that then they kind of overcompensate and then end up doing the thing that causes that math baggage, which is like, all that early exposure to things that you're not prepared for. Yeah, for formal academic, the formal math practice and stuff. But it's just like, I was thinking earlier, as I was thinking about this episode, I was like walking around my neighborhood and I'm like, math is how we make sense of the world. And it's not anything that's like crazy. It's just taking numbers and ideas and logic for us to make sense of the patterns that we see, the ordering of things, how to quantify stuff, to make sense of how God's created the world. So it's just, you know, a lot of it's creating the environment and not putting the anxiety out there. Like, oh, math is the boogeyman. You know, it's like, well, time is something we use to guide us through our day. And so we just look at the clock and it tells us what time it is. And we don't have to get nervous about, you know, that it's, 2:44 or whatever. You know, it's just like you can reference the clock throughout your day, have analog clocks around your house, and then gradually your kids learn, you know, or you reference days right. of the week. Like today, we go to church on Sunday and you go to your grandparents on Thursday. Mm-hmm. So we have Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 4 days until we get, you know, it's just like, mm-hmm. that's math. All of that's math. Your birthday's right. in November. Your brother's right. birthday's in April, you know, like, and right. and connecting those dots for mm-hmm. that's all first grade. Second, like all of that is really young math, but yeah. we get all nervous about it. Like, I need a worksheet, or they're not really yes. doing it.
And what you're modeling, Rachel, right now is you're pretending to be talking to your children. This is the beauty of homeschool, is they're with parents who are teaching them all day long, because all of life is a teaching moment mm-hmm. when you're with your children all day. That's why there's no such thing as quality time without quantity time, because we need to be with them all the time. These teaching moments don't ring a bell and say, okay, teaching moment. Mm-hmm. It's right. You're driving down the street and they're like, when are we going to Grandma's lake house? Mm-hmm. Well, let's think about that. Today's Tuesday. And then mm-hmm. tomorrow is what day? And then what comes after that? And what day do you go to Grandma's house? Thursday. Yes. So you have, you know, it's like people don't understand. They make teaching children so hard because it's really discipleship. It's mentoring. It's just pouring into them all the time.
The next school year is coming quickly. If you are looking to simplify your to-do list and maximize your child's impact, check out Voteberg Music Academy for a holistic approach to music. For less than the price of one private lesson, your whole family can learn either guitar, piano, violin, mandolin, or ukulele from professional musicians that have been performing for decades. Instead of learning in isolation, your musician will be inspired to be a part of a community of other like-minded families performing on a student showcase, participating in quarterly challenges, and competing in contests for cash prizes. Instead of trying to pick out songs for themselves on YouTube, the Voteberg method offers a proven success path that thousands of students have used to earn badges mailed to their doorstep while gaining confidence and proficiency as a musician.
Live coaching calls with your instructor will tailor lessons to each of your students' specific needs and goals. If you're looking to bring fun, rewarding music into your home this school year, go to VoteBurgMusicAcademy.com. Use our code HOMESCHOOL25 for 25% off your first month. Simplify your curriculum search with music lessons designed for families. Voteburg Music Academy will hold your hand each step of the way. Now let's get back to the show.
So, All right, let's talk some more then, because the next thing I want to teach parents about is the importance of games. Mm. Most games are math, and children love to play games, and it's the best and second best way to learn things. The first is through music, and the second is through games. And so we always want to look for math games without them knowing that they're doing math. So a little inexpensive way to break into that world is a little book written by a lady named Peggy Kay, K-A-Y-E, and it's called Games for Math. And I think it's still in print and very accessible. And my motto is have your children make the game, and then they're going to want to play the game. Mm-hmm. So make it first with them and then let them play it. So, and then any kind of, like when JJ was a little boy, we had something called the big dice game, and you would roll the dice and you would have to add the two, you know, together. Or we had X from outer space and you roll the dice and then you multiplied what was on, you know, the two. So like they don't know they're doing math. They're just playing a game with you. Mm-hmm. So math is a great, games are a great way, I should say, to just give them lots of confidence with math skills. Mm-hmm. And then when you get to the point where you want a curriculum, let's just talk about some that have been popular with our families. So I would say the one that people primarily have used through the years that work with me would be Math U C, and it's a wonderful program. It's very much based on manipulatives and hands-on stuff, and you see a video, I believe, once a week, and then the rest of the week you kind of work independently. Now, some families with many children run into problems with that each child feels like they need their parent with them. That's a problem, because if you have more than one child, you're going to be doing math all day long and you don't get to anything else. So, but it's a wonderful program, but just be aware that it might take up a lot of mommy, you know, energy, and you might be feeling like one foot on the dock, one foot in the boat, and you're being stretched all day long. Another curriculum is Right Start Math, which is a marvelous program using abacuses. But again, it is the most, mommy intensive program of any curriculum. But if your kids grow up with that curriculum, they will probably be math geniuses. You may go to the old folks home from exhaustion because it is more work. But if you can pull it off or have an older teach a younger or, you know, delegate, that's a great program. And then my grandchildren have discovered something that they're really excited about. And it started with my granddaughter, Isley, and it's called CTC, so Charlie, Tom, Charlie, math, and it's from New Zealand. And Isley first used it, and then I would hear her getting all of her girlfriends using it. You know, she would like recruit everybody to use it. And then I started to hear about my grandsons using it. And then one day JJ was home from work or something, and he was observing it. And he just got very fired up about this program. And to my knowledge, because I've never used it, it was, of course, invented fairly recently, is that the children are working independently, and it's very short and very sweet. Yeah. And because some families tell me that they're doing math for 3 hours a day, and that's when I want to just sob. Like, no, this is never going to work. Home, like Dorothy Moore used to say, 20 minutes a subject. Like, that's kind of the goal, and that is what CTC produces. So when we were talking about allowing people to advertise on the podcast, JJ said, can I talk to the people at CTC? Because I would love to talk about that math. Mm-hmm. So it just kind of happened organically. And a lot of families are excited about it.
Yeah. And I think you have to gauge about, I have a friend who uses it with her family, but kind of deciding, Are they ready to use a computer? Like, you know, then you have to start. It's like if you give a child a workbook and stuff, are they able to read or do they need you to read the instructions? It's kind of similar. It, on a computer, are they ready to learn how to use a computer, or is that going to be a hindrance to the math lesson? You know, it's kind of like you have to know, which is why the games are so helpful. If you don't have a literate child yet, then the games just simplify your life because you're getting that practice with basic skills, but you're not having to also teach someone to read at the same time.
That's right. That's so good. And I want to address something, and let's talk about screen-based products.
Okay.
So obviously, anyone who knows me knows that if it were up to me, I would blow up every computer in America. But but one of the big shots in the Silicon Valley, I can't remember which one it was, maybe the editor of Wired. But anyway, he said this about screens. He said, in our house, screens are used for work, but never for fun or entertainment.
Mm.
I love that. So for Carol's side to be telling you to use a screen to do math is rather ironic.
Right.
But my idea is, no, this is just school. We do it very short time. We're certainly not spending our day in front of, we're not doing computer school. That is the farthest thing from our minds. But if we're doing, you know, 25 minutes a day on the screen doing their math, and then the screen is never part of their life any other time, I think that's a win. Also, making sure that your kids know their number facts before you ever do any curriculum. So that's why by then they're probably in third or fourth grade and they've been doing all this other stuff. They've been cooking and baking and measuring with measuring tapes and using scales and doing a paper plate clock and doing numerical equivalents for coins, saying, give me 5 coins for this coin. Now give me 25 coins for this coin. Now give me 3 coins for this coin. So you're doing all this stuff at home organically. Mm-hmm. We don't do curriculum in the playpen. And I know people will try and sell you curriculum, and they probably sell it to you because you want it, but you don't want it, and your children don't need it. The other thing I want to say about screens, and we can't say this enough, is screens are never, ever, ever allowed in the bedrooms. They are always in a public place, always. And everybody in the Silicon Valley, and they're not even people of faith, they say that is the one universal rule that they all quote, and every time they're interviewed by anybody, well, we don't let our kids do social media. We don't let our kids do this. We don't let our kids do that. But the one rule that every one of them says is, and there are never screens in the bedroom, ever, ever, ever. So put that little computer or laptop or whatever you're using on the kitchen counter when mommy's chopping, you know, vegetables, or in the dining room next to mommy or whatever. And people are walking by and looking over your child's shoulder. And so that's something that also needs to be explained, and it can't be repeated enough.
Yes. Where do like time tests come in or something like that as far as speed that you're wanting to get for these?
Okay. So the question of time tests, pre-Mathit is designed to teach you to add and subtract, but Mathit will teach you speed and accuracy. And the beautiful thing about Mathit is it is not rote memory. Mathit is teaching what you said earlier, Rach, the systems and the patterns in mathematics, not 6 times 6 is like that is not what we're doing there, because it goes in one ear and out the other.
Yeah.
What we're teaching them is how to always know, like 9 plus any number is 1 less than that number, and then you just say teen. So 9 plus 8 is 7, teen. 9 plus 5 is 4, teen. 9 plus 2 is 1 teen, or we say 11. So I have never really memorized my number facts. I have to tell you, I went to graduate school and never knew my number facts. I had all these elaborate ways to get that. Well, I know 7 times 7. So then 7 times 8, and then I mean, you cannot believe the things that I would do. because children, I'm sad to say this, but really bright children balk at rote memory. And so I never, you know, school came very easily to me. But one thing that didn't come easily to me was math, because I never learned my number facts. So think about a mother like Ben Carson, his mother coming home and saying, "Ben, you don't know your number facts, and you will never go outside to play another day for the rest of your life until you learn them." Now, that was the most loving thing she could ever do, and her son became a world-famous brain surgeon. But would he have gotten through medical school if he hadn't known his number facts? I don't think so. So, like, sometimes you just have to say to your kids, this is a line we're drawing here, and if you want to eat dinner, you will figure this out. You know, like, this is not negotiable. My parents, bless their hearts, just probably gave up with me. I was a very stubborn child. So, but it haunted me all my life, and I hated math. So, point being, I'll tell you when I fell in love with math. When I was in high school, I was taking driver's ed, and I had gotten a C, which in our family was not an acceptable grade.
Right.
And I gotten a C in geometry, which, you know, everybody else flunked it, but I got a C, you know, but to my parents, that was not acceptable. So my mom said, "Well, you're going to driver's ed anyway for this, you know, over the summer for summer school. While you're there, why don't you go ahead and take geometry and ace it?" And she talked me into it. And this very famous teacher that we had, Dr. Saltarelli, he was a professor at University of Buffalo and taught at my high school as well. And he was very, he was like Don Rickles. I mean, he was an insulter. He was a comedian. He kept you on your toes. He was like an urban legend. Of course, he only taught the really bright kids all year. He taught Trig and Cal. But in the summer, who goes to summer school?
Yeah.
The dumb kids, right? Me. And he knew my cousins and he knew my brother, you know, so so he was, you know, he knew me. And everyone else in the class had failed geometry. But I was the rock star with my C, right? So, and he just, he was so witty, so funny. You wouldn't dare not do your homework. He would shame you in front of the whole class, embarrass you, humiliate you with his rapier wit, you know? And so... So for the first time in my life, I did my homework and I really like showed up to every class and I aced it and got a 95 on the state exam, the Regents. And, but also because I was an artist all my life, geometry appealed to me because it's the most artistic form of math that there is. So a lot of it's your teacher. You know, we would have teachers that were like law school students. They had no interest in math. They were just doing something, you know what I mean? And the dumb kids like me were sitting under the worst teachers. And the good students in math were getting the really gifted teachers. And so, you know, that's a whole nother issue. But anyway, so that's my math story. And then let's close.
My observation with like geometry is has been that if you're real, so algebra came really easily to me. I never had a problem with algebra one or algebra two or anything. But then when I had to take geometry, I was struggling. And my friend who was not good at algebra was like blowing it out of the wall. You know, it was just like skipping to geometry class. And I'm like, oh, do we have to go again today? And then when I went to, I took trigonometry one semester too. And I was doing terrible.
I was doing terrible.
And I had to get a classmate to like do my, like we had to do the homework together and explain it. She had to hold my hand the whole time. And then I did fine, but it was like, I feel like you're kind of one or the other, like something about the mind and like that artistic
right
or,
brain,
you know,
left brain. That's right. Well, all right, let's close with sex and math because we haven't talked about that. So, Rachel, when we when the homeschool movement was birthed, Saxon math was pretty much the only game in town. So John Saxon started, he was a high school math curriculum designer. And in the classes where they were using his books, the kids fell in love with mathematics. And he had mottos. One of his motto was, "I never ask a child to do anything in a class that they cannot do." So just like Dorothy Moore, he was building success experiences every day. He also based his whole program on remediation. So the repetition of everything that you've learned, you constantly keep it in the gene pool all the time. You're always reviewing everything that you know mathematically, because math is a bunch of building blocks intellectually. And so he started with the book 6-5 was his low. I mean, the youngest book he created was 6-5. And Dr. Moore used to say to us, if you have been living on a desert island and had never seen any kind of mathematical concept, you could take 6-5, because it starts with, this is how we count. 1, 2, 3, 4. That was the first page. Mm-hmm. And it went all the way through, and it was designed for normal a normal sixth grader and an advanced fifth grader.
Ah.
That's what the number means. So 6-5. And then he created 7-6, which is a remedial book, which you don't necessarily have to use. And then algebra 1/2, then algebra, et cetera. Mm. So in the olden days, that's what everyone used. And it's a brilliant program. There's no bells and whistles. It's not fun. It's not colorful. There's no singing as you do your math. It's very simple.
Yeah.
But John Saxon knew that if you are good at something, as I quoted earlier, you'll like it. Mm-hmm. And so he set out to make kids good at math. Mm-hmm. And so other people created other books, and then the company sold, and now they have, like, you know, Saxon for the playpen. That is not his at all. He was working with children that were completely abstract, and that's why they loved math. And those other programs that he did not create, I do not recommend. I've had families tell me with their little kids, like first grade, that they're spending 3 hours a day with sobbing and, you know, beating of breast. It's like, no, we don't even. So Dr. Moore used to say the first math book you need is Saxon 6-5, if you're going to do Saxon.
Mm-hmm.
And until then, you're doing all the other things we talked about.
Yeah.
The hands-on, manipulative, real-life math experiences.
Yep.
One last thought. I'm sorry. About Saxon. Okay. So there's a lot of repetition in Saxon. That is intentional. He intended it to be easy and to be repetitive. Hmm. But in homeschool, we get to custom make our suit. So when JJ was in 6-5, I said to him, you have to do the new information every day. And then you can do either the odd numbers or the even numbers on the review problems. Mm-hmm. So that way, if he didn't miss more than two, I allowed him to do that. So you're not doing 30 review problems every day if you don't need them. If you need them, they're there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's helpful. Also, why don't you speak to whether you finish a book or how to about that?
That's a great topic. Yes. So having been a classroom teacher, I learned little secrets from other classroom teachers. No math book is designed to actually be finished. Math books end with the beginning of next year's work. And so, you know, if you have a really hot shot child who loves math and just can't get enough, of course he can finish his book, but a lot of kids don't actually finish the book, but don't panic, because next year their first book is going to begin where you left off with the previous year's book.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we've gone through it all, I think. I'm sure there might be questions, but this is a good start to get us going in the right direction, and hopefully just exhale, take a little breather, and not start to panic just because you're not doing worksheets or it's not going well with your second grader, you know.
Yeah. Yes. With your second grader, take those worksheets and start your wood stove with them and go outside for a walk and count birds and tulips and leaves and measure your lawn versus your neighbor's lawn and how many of your boats can fit in your neighbor's swimming pool. So give them real life experiences, and eventually curriculum will be very comfortable and familiar as they get older.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to the Homeschool Made Simple podcast. If you like what you heard in this episode, please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or share this episode with a friend. It means so much when you help us spread the message of homeschool made simple with others. Thanks for joining us this week on the Homeschool Made Simple podcast. Remember, Jesus' commandments are not burdensome. What he calls you to do,
He will enable you to do. Blessings.